Hello, 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 everyone. I am Pedro.
And I'm Meredith.
And today, we're shooting varmints. No, today we are covering Twisters. We are taking our second stab at this, by the way. But we are covering Twisters. Last week we took a look at Twister. I found it enjoyable at times. Meredith liked it a little bit more than I did. And this week we have pretty much the exact opposite situation.
Yeah.
I kind of dug this movie. I kind of dug Twisters.
It was all right.
It was all right.
It was all right.
Yeah, a watchable film, she
said. Yeah, it was watchable.
I liked the action in this movie. I liked the way things were composed. I enjoyed pretty much the movie from start to finish. It never really bothered me at any point. Yeah, it had some stupid things in it.
Yeah.
It had some rushed storylines in there that didn't really work, but I was entertained by this movie, and that's really all that I ask. And I think the number one thing to take from this movie is the rise of Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
Truly becoming a star.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He was my favorite part of this whole movie.
Yeah, he's blowing up everywhere.
Yeah.
Like he went from just a small part in television stuff. We grew to love him from Scream Queens. Chad Thadwell.
Yeah.
Radwell, or whatever his name
was. Chad Radwell.
If you remember the show, you certainly know him. He just stole scenes from Emma Roberts, which is sort of whatever, but he stole scenes from Jamie Lee Curtis as well, which is even more impressive.
And he's good looking.
He is a handsome feller.
That helps.
Yeah, he's a good looking guy.
Yeah.
Just look at him and I want him in my mouth.
Ew. Like,
what? I was lost in his eyes. Did I go too far?
Wow.
Show's canceled already. They can complain about us on social media. And if they wanted to do that, Meredith, how would they?
They could actually email us at grittyrebootcast@gmail.com.
Yes, and if you're looking for a more modern way to get a hold of us, you can just simply search for Gritty Reboot on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as well. We do put the video podcast up on YouTube as well. I don't know if you're following on Spotify where we have it uploaded up there as well. But we do have the video and just an audio-only version on YouTube as well. And we do some game streams every now and then. We've been really lazy about it as of late. We got a better laptop to do it. We've done zero streaming with that laptop.
Yeah, you've said
and we're like as almost well done. Huh?
You've said as well.
Yeah, lot. I know. We're doing a bad job. We're just blowing through Fallout. We're not doing that at all.
Yeah, we really should.
Yeah, we have to just do it on a Friday. We have to sacrifice. We have to do it this Friday. It's my last Friday.
Yeah.
It's my last Friday.
Ever.
Ever.
Never,
I'll be shot
never
tomorrow home. Out of a cannon.
What are some of the things that you liked about this movie?
So I already said Glenn Powell, but I think one of the elements that I really enjoyed is the original film had a relationship running through it.
Yeah.
Like a divorced couple trying to come back together again. It's not always great, but the leads have enough chemistry to make it work. This movie is wise in a sequel to try a similar type of story.
Yeah.
And it does a really good job, I think, of maintaining that and not leaning too hard into it. It's there between the two of them, but it's not the main element of the film like it was in the original Twisters or Twister.
I didn't think they had that great a chemistry.
No, I don't believe they have chemistry. No. It's not as good as what's in the original movie, but I didn't think they played off each other poorly either.
No, I didn't think it was bad, like, but yeah, they didn't have that much chemistry. So it kind of hurt the movie.
Yeah, I think that is one element where I think it is outflanked by the original. And I think that's probably, for me, the only place where it is. I think they just paired nicely together on screen as opposed to like feeling like a true couple or anything like that.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, I still think what happens between them works, and keeping that element the same was a pretty good idea. But this movie has a lot of pulse-pounding like action, which I really enjoy. Like there's some really harrowing sequences with these tornadoes.
The CG is done really well in this movie, as you would expect out of a summer blockbuster like this.
You sort of wonder, the original film still looks pretty solid for the most part. There's a few spots here and there where old stuff, how they did it back then. But the effects in this are really impeccable. And the tornadoes really look fantastic. They have this a really realistic quality to them that I enjoy. Like you see a lot of stuff floating in there or just, you know, flying inside a tornado.
Yeah.
They don't do a sequence where they just kind of hang out inside of one at the very end of the movie.
I did really smirk at the fact that Glenn Powell's character, I forget his name, Tyler, I think.
Yeah.
Tyler shoots fireworks inside of a tornado. Like,
yeah, Tyler
cool
Owens
with that.
Yeah. I mean, I have no issue with that. I thought that was pretty. So I felt like I could imagine like a popular YouTuber doing that. There were times like that where I think that character could have been just a disaster in the hands of another actor. And the charm of Glenn Powell makes it work. We watched Overboard. We are going to cover Overboard, but not anytime soon. And we talk about that movie's concept, which is a little rapey.
Yeah, it's so bad.
It's a little
but
rapey.
But I love it.
But the thing is, the charm of Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn make it kind of work.
Yeah.
It's still a little rapey, but, you know, it's not. It's, you know, fun entertainment to some extent.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, they remade it, and they made it less rapey. Did they? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
There's a 15-minute Anna Faris begging sequence.
Wow.
It's even more rapey than the original. Director's like, we're going totally gritty on this one. No?
It would be a gritty reboot. And we would cover it.
Yeah. Would you enjoy that, a gritty reboot of Overboard?
You know, there are some movies where I would love there to be a gritty reboot of. I don't know if that's the one.
It just becomes I Spit in Your Grave, basically.
God, no.
And we have to cover that one day, and you hate those. I have to cover those alone, probably.
You might have.
Yeah, you hate those movies. You really do. Even though I think there's one of the reboot sequels that I kind of like. I think that's the best I can say about the series.
I get why people like it, but I can't handle that kind of
violence. I think the original is a little violence. More, a little more exploitation, an exploitation film. Therefore, I can have a bit of fun with it, even though it is not well executed, to say the least. That's putting it mildly. It's not the most well executed film for the sensitive subject matter.
No.
Yeah. It's like if Uwe Boll decided, like, you know what? He was the man who directed Schindler's List instead of Steven Spielberg. Like, what would that be like, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it wouldn't be done quite as masterfully, I guess I would say. Who knows? Absolutely. Maybe Uwe Boll's a brilliant filmmaker.
Yeah, but he has no concept of a Holocaust.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe he does. I don't know.
I don't know.
I shouldn't presume to know him.
Next week, we're going to do career breakdown. Uwe Boll.
No.
Uwe Boll. Uwe Boll. I don't know how to pronounce it.
No, we won't.
All right. Why not?
Because we won't.
He made a lot of video game movies.
He made a lot of shitty movies.
You love video games. You love the Far Cry series. He made a Far Cry movie. You've never seen it.
No, and I don't want to ever see it.
You love those Postal games.
Postal?
Yeah, nobody even knows what that is. But it's a movie where you can see Dave Foley's penis.
Huh.
Yes. There's actually quite a few of those.
Good.
I don't know if he gets more money per dick shot, because he takes it out a lot. Or maybe just there. I don't know.
Very well.
He needed money at one point, guys. Sometimes you need money, you got to whip it out. That's how it goes.
Yeah, all those sex workers.
Sex workers, that's right.
That he's been stooping.
Stooping. Whores.
No, not whores.
I didn't say whore. I said
sex
whores.
Workers.
I said whores. That's a very different thing.
Is it?
Yeah, that's a fun way to refer to a sex worker. But you know what doesn't have sex workers?
Way to go.
Twisters. Are you surprised the movie is a big hit?
No.
You're not?
No.
I didn't know how it was going to go, to be honest. I really didn't know if it was going to be like break even, a big flop, nobody cares. I noticed Glenn Powell was in it, so I was kind of rooting for it. I talked about how I was a fan from before, from the olden days.
Yeah, we're OG.
Yeah, OG. OG fans. I love how you said that. I'm going to make that a clip. But I was surprised that it did as well as it did, and it's still doing. It's holding fairly well over time.
I was surprised at how many people were there.
Yeah, like, yeah, because we weren't in. Yeah, we didn't go in the first week. We went in the second week.
And we went at like 12:45.
Yeah, we went because we went to a place where we could eat as well.
Yeah.
And we went there for lunch, and it was a pretty. Actually, the crowd got into the movie. They laughed. You know, they were into more than they were into Deadpool.
Yeah.
That crowd was dead for Deadpool.
People had some really great experiences in some of the theaters. I had heard, like, some of the podcasts I listened to.
Yeah.
They had great experiences.
We didn't have anything in our
anything.
Deadpool.
It was dead.
Okay, like, I know we're talking about Twisters, and then like the trailer is playing right now, but I think that had a huge impact on us finding the film. Just very okay.
Yeah.
Like, we were very cold on Deadpool. Like, it didn't suck or anything like that, but it was kind of whatever. But nobody in our audience made a peep. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop in that theater.
Yeah.
I think the loudest moment in the theater is when I laughed at the proposal meta joke.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite joke in the movie. Also, I did enjoy the Gambit stuff. But I was in the bathroom when he debuted, so I didn't. Nope. I couldn't pop.
I didn't know you liked Gambit.
Oh, yeah. I love Gambit. Hmm. That movie was... Okay, what they got right is they portrayed Gambit pretty well. Now, the accent was supposed to be a joke, obviously. And it was a very good joke. I enjoyed it because, I mean, I couldn't even understand what the fuck he was saying. But you're not supposed to. That just happens so to Gambit. Bad. Yeah, that's okay. Like, it's not supposed to be a good accent. That was a great gag. But, like, the fight scene was, like, great Gambit stuff. Him throwing the cards, blowing people up. Like, Gambit can do some really cool shit. And because that was R-rated, we got to see that. I'm not the biggest Wesley Snipes fan, but weirdly enough, I mean, it was nice to see him. I think the real surprise was Jennifer Garner.
Yeah. She looked great.
Yeah, she looked great. And she fit in nicely. Apparently, Nick Cage was the cameo they couldn't get.
Oh.
Yeah, either Nick Cage wasn't available or wasn't at a point where he felt like he could do it, you know? I can't remember what the reason was. He was either in between something or like he was kind of sick at the time.
No telling, man. Man,
but it would have been great to get him back in as Ghost Rider.
He's got to make up for all those taxes or whatever he had problems with.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Wesley Snipes, he'd always rumored to have had a bad history with Ryan Reynolds because of Blade Trinity, which is a legendarily fucked production.
Yeah.
Wesley Snipes smoking weed in his trailer all day and never coming out. But apparently they were able to patch it up. It made for a nice moment in the movie, but... You know, I still give it like a 6.
Yeah. Yeah. We just didn't like it.
Yeah. I think if we'd had a better reaction.
I think if we had a better theater experience, yeah,
that plays
it would have probably bumped it up to a 7 or an 8.
Yeah. Cause there's certain moments I love because like I can remember the theater like cheering or going.
Yeah, nuts. Exactly.
One of my favorite moments was the movie didn't do very well, but Serenity, you know, the Firefly film.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great moment at the end of the movie where What's-Her-Face stands, like, triumphant, like, over all the Reapers and stuff like that. And, like, the crowd just was like, yeah! Like, everybody really got into it because, like, you know, it was opening night. It was full of people who'd actually seen the show. So, like, those are things that really made that movie. And, like, most people probably, if they saw that in a theater or they just saw it in video, it's just a neat little moment.
Yeah.
But, like, it was almost like a bonding experience. The same thing happens with, like, the end of Endgame. But Twisters also gave us a nice reaction, which I think helped. It certainly led, I don't think it helped with my review or anything like that, but it certainly did lead me to enjoy the film more. So what's an element that you did not enjoy in this film? What's something that dragged it down for you?
The lead actress.
Daisy Edgar Jones?
Yeah. Not to knock her, I don't know. She could be a great actress, but I thought she was terrible.
I didn't necessarily have a problem. I
thought she was pretty weak.
I didn't necessarily have a problem with her. I didn't necessarily find her to be the best character. Then again, the original neither was Joe.
Not the best character either. No, you're right. But still, I love the what Helen Hunt brought to the character. Sometimes that's what you get. You know, you get this shitty character. You've got to make it sing somehow. And I don't think she does that with this character.
I love how the film begins. We have a very quick cameo from Kieran Shipka, who we always enjoyed from Sabrina
and Mad Men. I was kind of surprised they killed her off so
early. I was too.
Spoiler alert, I'm sorry.
Yeah, spoilers. As always, guys, these are spoiler casts. Like, if you haven't seen this movie, you're going to be lost. But, you know, we're not trying to be dicks or anything. But it's tough to talk about a movie without really getting into it. She leaves pretty quickly. By the way, Kieran Shipka, she's in one scene in two big movies this year. So she's in the one scene here in Twisters, and she's apparently in the best scene in Long Legs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's in the best scene in Long Legs, and she's just in that scene, and that's it.
Huh.
I saw her promoting it. I saw that on, and I was like, I didn't even realize that she was in that. Like, and then when I Googled it, like, that's the one thing people were saying about it. Like, it's either the best scene or the most chilling scene in the film. We have not seen Long Legs yet. We chose to see Deadpool or Twister and Twisters.
Yeah.
So, here we are.
Yeah, well, we had to do it. Twisters for...
It's been a good year for horror. There's been a lot of kind of cool movies that have been out there. There was Late Night with the Devil that we also haven't seen.
But will any of them win an Oscar?
Probably not. It's like how I thought Pearl. I didn't think Pearl could get a nomination, but I thought Mia Goth could slip in.
It's never going to happen.
I thought Mia Goth could slip in. When she didn't get a Golden Globe, I was like, it's over. It's never going to happen.
She might pick something that's not
she can easily get out of the horror genre and really do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
I think she'll be fine to be in a prestige drama or something. I don't know if she'll be the lead, but I think she can do great supporting work.
Yeah, she's pretty great.
Maxine didn't make great money. It made like something like $17 or $18 million.
Hmm.
That's it.
Well, we saw it, and that's what matters.
That's our epilogue on the Maxine episode. It did okay.
We've seen a lot of movies lately.
Yeah, we really have. I've enjoyed it.
It's been good.
I've enjoyed it. Yeah. I've liked going to Movie Tavern and eating a decent, I stress decent meal
there. Getting a large Coke.
Yeah. But they do have a nice 4K projector.
Or Pepsi.
Pepsi. Yeah, they screw you over. They don't give you what you
bane
want.
Bane of my existence.
I need my Coca-Cola. Don't you give me Pepsi, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Is that too harsh?
I like my Coca-Cola. I'm a big fan. Big motherfucking fan.
So this movie is directed by Lee Isaac Chung. And I think he is the secret sauce here that makes all of this come together and work.
You think so?
I think his direction is fucking amazing. I think he outdoes what Jan de Bont did in the original, who I think really directs a pretty stupid movie to the goal line, you know? Like, he gets it to the finish line in a pretty entertaining and fun jaunt for the most part. Like, to me, the film doesn't necessarily slow down all that much, and I think most of the action sequences are pretty well scripted, especially in the middle of the movie when they're trying to escape in the pool.
Yeah.
That whole sequence, I think, is thrilling as fuck and just absolutely blows away anything they did in the original film. That's one of my favorite disaster weather-related scenes ever. I think that's great with them holding onto the pipes right there as that truck lands and covers and
somebody
them.
Gets taken by the
Yeah. I love that. That he's like, stay down. And like he comes up and it's like this wind just grabs him and he flies. And I love the way they portray that. Like, whoosh, just gone. Because that's, you know, what it would be. You know, I think early on a death is Karen Shippen gets hit by something hard and she gets knocked out and thrown in, or possibly killed by it. And
yeah, then immediately. Into the tornado. You hope she was killed.
You know, and you know, there's some brutality, I think, to these deaths that wasn't necessarily there in the original.
No, you're right.
And I think it leads a sense of danger to these scenes. Now, I mean, do I think the protagonists are going to die in the movie? Probably not, even though it would be a fucking metal way to go out, wouldn't it? Yeah. Like in that finale, like the tornado just destroys them and Glenn Powell's just impaled on them. And like Kate's just beating on his chest. I failed again. The tornado beat me.
Yeah, her also having the, I see those clouds up there.
I can feel the weather.
I can feel
the weather tells me the tornado will turn here.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But Bill Paxton had that same power in the original.
Yeah, but he didn't. It was understated. Everybody else was kind of like, you know, he's the crazy man and all that.
It is true. I mean, but this it's one, like the whole
thing of her.
Literally her plot point about how she gets there is that no one can chase a tornado better than she can.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the trauma.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, she's just this tornado soothsayer.
Yeah, I thought that was stupid. I also think them having this like foam stuff stop a tornado.
The movie ends with them curing tornadoes.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
They cured the tornado.
Stupidest thing ever in my life.
Like, how would you feel if like you were watching a really kick-ass movie and they were made it through a tornado and this guy's like, wait, what if I toss a grenade into it? We could stop all tornadoes. Like, wait, no, we can't. That's not a thing. And they're just like, what if we threw some fucking foam up there? Yeah, I mean, they tried to science mumbo jumbo it a little bit. And watch me be a fucking idiot. It may work or whatever, but I'm pretty sure if it worked, we'd be fucking doing it.
Yeah.
So I didn't care for that element of the movie. However, as a film, I understand the need to tell a narrative story with a conclusion. And them surviving isn't enough conclusion. Her experiment working helps. And it doesn't necessarily work. It does, the tornado dissipates, but it could have been anything. Like, they stress that very clearly as the movie ends. So I think that's a strong point of it. But we're led to believe that she did it. We feel like she did it.
Jury, I vote guilty.
I think the film covers its ass enough. But like I said, the direction of this film is what really stands out. It really is. It's what puts this movie far above anything else. It's like what we talk about every now and then, where just a good director wanders into a blockbuster and it becomes this giant thing. Fox letting James Cameron pitch for Aliens.
Yeah.
You know, like they're like, okay, you know, he came in the legendary story, he writes Aliens on the board and he writes a dollar sign with an S through it, you know, and bam, they give him all the money and it becomes this classic iconic movie and it launches Alien from just a one movie sort of horror show to this giant franchise we're still under the thumb of today and we'll be covering again real soon.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that, by the way. It'd be cool to talk about the fucking Alien movies.
Oof, I know.
I know. We're really go into it.
Should we just... Never mind. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. You know, we should not talk about podcast planning while trying to talk about Twisters right now.
Yeah.
But I think that's one element that I really enjoyed was the direction of this movie. And I think that's one thing that just has to be said. It's really just excellent. I think the way he just builds that tension and just that extra touch of danger in this movie while still keeping it PG-13.
Yeah.
It's a fine line to walk to make a PG-13 film feel a little dangerous. We talked about that with the Batman. And even Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight films. Mm-hmm. You know, you make a PG-13 film feel darker and a little dangerous. It is possible to do. And this movie did it in open fields in Oklahoma. So that's pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, you know, I would have been interested to see how Maya would have reacted to a movie like that, like a kid.
Yeah, because I think the weather stuff can be intimidating for a kid.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it can.
It kind of can be too, as yeah. well.
How did you feel about the look of this movie? Because it was shot on film. Did you notice that?
Yeah, of course I noticed that. I love fucking film. I'm a big fan of it, and I know it's coming. It's having a comeback.
Well, it was good to see it. The one thing I will say is we always look forward to when we notice like there's a new 4K transfer of a classic movie.
Yeah.
You know, something that was shot on celluloid, because we know those are the movies that are going to give us the best bang for the buck when they get that 4K remaster or something like that. Unless it's like Aliens that they fuck up with AI or whatever. But for the most part, like those are always pretty cool. Like we saw Witness the other day, I think that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
We saw Witness in like 4K HDR, and that like you don't appreciate the cinematography of a movie like that that you've seen a bunch of times on VHS, and then you watch it again for the first time in like 15 years.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, man, this really is a beautiful film. I didn't realize. I just never thought about it. You know, I think that's one of the cool and impressive things about, you know, being able to go back to film. You know, the thing about these big bunch of Hollywood productions is that the medium of which they store the film is faulty, because for years, and now everything is 4K, but for a long time they worked on airy cameras that only shot in 2K. They were the standard for a long time for a lot of films, and they're beautiful cameras. They have great, a lot of movies you love were shot on Arri Alexas in only 2K. And despite that, there will always be a resolution cap on that image. I know you can up-res, but they are limited to what the 2K image actually was that was shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and film has this ability to, you know, be scanned really infinitely. I'm sure there's a theoretical limit of where, oh, you can't scan it anymore. But whatever we might do, celluloid is just a fantastic way to transfer what a film is to another medium.
Yeah.
I think some of the original movies that we shot digitally are really in lousy shape. We're going to cover 28 Days Later sometime later next year with the 28 Years Later coming out. And with that, we'll take a look at a movie that was shot on fucking mini DV in 2000.
Yeah.
You know, like that was an acceptable thing. And that looks pretty terrible now. And there's even movies like Episode II. Like that was shot on a pretty early Sony camera. And, you know, its look is not going to hold up. If Lucas had stuck to film, it would look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks very digital today. And I understand he had to blaze a trail, but there are prices to pay for that at times.
Yeah.
And going back to this film look, I think is really impressive. And like, I know they graded it, but the cool thing about film is the look you want comes really off the Kodak stock.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting what you want. You're getting the colors to pop. You're just really playing it up later in post. You're not really doing what you do now, which is almost like creating your whole entire look in the computer once you're done shooting on digital. You know, the film gives you that look and you just work off that. And there's such a beauty to it. And, you know, like working on film was harder, so it makes me appreciate what they did even more. When you work on digital, you can shoot all you want. When you work on film, you only have a limited stock.
Yeah.
You know? I know it's a big budget movie, but you can't go fucking nuts. You know?
But it's so worth it, because film just makes everything beautiful.
It does. There is a really good
great look to it.
Yeah, we were able to watch this in 4K. We were now, granted, it's just a movie tavern, but they do advertise their big 4K projector in their biggest theater. We didn't go to one of those D boxes that like throw you around.
Oh yeah,
we didn't do that. We just saw it in and we didn't see 3D because it wasn't shot that way. So we just saw it, you know, that way on a big screen, and it really looked great. You know, to be honest, to see that, because having seen Deadpool, which I'm pretty sure was shot digitally.
Oh yeah, probably.
Marvel, I think, always shoots on
a lot of
Alexa.
Movies are still doing that. I'm just saying, I just noticed recently like a few movies coming out on film, which is great.
Yeah. You know, I thought, you know, one of those movies I thought about that was when we watched Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
That like 4K in HDR. You could see like how the beauty of that film image.
Yeah.
I was glad we sprung for extra on our projector when I was watching that movie. Like those are the things I really love, when you can see just beautiful cinematography captured that way.
Yeah.
I'll look forward to the 4K, getting this movie at home and watching it again, because I think it's a really great looking film. Not all blockbusters really are, but this one's a really great looking film. Great lighting as well.
We'll get to show Maya and see if she likes it.
Yeah, I think she liked the original film too.
Yeah.
It moves. It moves. This movie moves. It rarely slows down for anything. Even, well, I mean, it's sort of the problem with it, because one of my issues I want to bring up is the corporation plot.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the original film, the corporate guys are the bad guys. And we start with the corporate guys. Over the course of the second act, we clunkily find out that there is a businessman who finances them, who is only looking to buy up people's land after tornadoes have destroyed them. And yeah, that's his interest in this technology they're trying to build to predict when tornadoes are coming.
Because that's another thing I didn't like was that character you're about to mention that survived with the main lead actress. I can't remember her name.
Daisy Edgar Jones. She played Kate.
Kate, yeah.
Anthony Ramos plays Javi, who we're going to talk about here in a sec.
Yeah, Javi. I didn't like his character at all. I didn't like the fact that he was a good guy, and then he's a bad guy, and then he's a good guy again. He works for this evil corporation, but he's okay with it, and now he's not okay with it, so.
I think he wanted to help people, and I think he wanted to get his company off the ground, and I think he was willing to let some things slide.
Because he likes money.
And I think, yeah, but I think seeing the results of it over the course of the film, was his character growth astounding? No,
it was ridiculous.
It didn't bother me. To be perfectly frank, I thought it was okay that his friend called him out on it, and he decided, like, no, nah, man, like, she's always has a good head on her shoulders, which he established how much respect he has for her. So when she really judges him for that, he turns his back on that corporate side of his company and that donor. I don't have any problem with that character growth. Is it well done? No, I don't believe it's that bad. I think that's where we're splitting hairs on this movie, is for me, that worked. Was it amazingly effective? No, but it did the job. It really did.
Cheesy.
Not cheesy. Just enough to work. Mm-hmm. Just enough, you know, it keeps the plot moving, and I didn't have any problem with it necessarily. And I thought he played in pretty nicely with the rest of the cast.
Whatever you say.
I like the big group of people, so.
Yeah.
I wish they got more time, more of a Glenn Powell's group, like his extra guys of YouTubers. But the movie doesn't really slow down enough to really explain that. And you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
Not everybody necessarily needs a backstory, but it could have been fun to see some more fun stuff with those guys. We get more of that in the original film.
Yeah.
This movie is very focused on our three main characters and the future Superman. David Cornensweat, he was the other guy with Javi, the one who was all down with doing the corporate stuff.
Yeah.
That's Superman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's who he is. Yeah. I remember when I thought he looks like a young Cap. I was like, oh, yeah, that's the motherfucker Superman. I was like, he's got the look already.
Good.
Yeah.
I didn't notice.
You didn't notice?
No, I didn't notice. It's going to be great for Superman.
It's James Gunn. I have faith.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about before we get to your facts?
No, man. I think we've...
Numerical score.
I give it a 6.
I'm going to give it a 7. I'd even leave like 7.5, but I don't like to do that. And I don't feel strong enough to give it an 8. I don't know if I enjoyed... You know what? I'll give it an 8.
Wow.
I'll give it an 8. I enjoyed it that much. I thought it was a ton of fun. Wasn't necessarily the smartest movie, no. But I enjoyed the ride of this film.
Glenn Powell was certainly worth it for me.
Yeah. And I wasn't so cold on Daisy Edgar Jones as you were.
Yeah.
You were very much down on anyone that wasn't Glenn Powell in this movie.
Yeah.
You were like, if you're not Glenn Powell, fuck off. That's your... He's had a big year. He's had a big year. We saw Hitman that we enjoyed, and then we saw this that we're really digging. So, well, I really dug it, but...
Well, I did read some angry reviews of people who somewhat agree with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, now I'm curious about that.
Yeah, there's some angry one-starers out there that I read a ton of reviews, so...
Well, I hope you would.
No, it's just weird. It's just weird how angry people were about this movie.
I you never really know what's going to trigger people's nostalgia anger. And I think that's the one thing I really hate about modern fan cultures today. Because it wasn't always that way, where people were just generally angry that something was even being remade.
Yeah.
But like now there's almost this vitriol towards it. And I think, you know, I know Jan de Bont was hesitant about this movie. But for the most part, I mean, it was time, you know, I mean, it'd been a long time since the original film. It was a good idea to do a sequel, a remake, reboot. I'm not quite sure what this is. They used Dorothy from the original film, so you're left to believe it's in the same timeline. But altogether, that's not really that important.
Well, that's why we covered it, because it was ambiguous.
Yeah.
Whether or not it was a sequel or if it was a reboot.
Exactly. Like, it's not really that big a deal, in all honesty, what it is. It's clearly trying to jumpstart the franchise, and that's what we cover.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly what we cover when they try to do that.
All right. James Paxton, the son of Bill Paxton, appears during the rodeo scene as the angry hotel guest.
I didn't catch that. I really, now I'm going to see if I can spot the Paxton in him. If I can see the Paxton in his eyes.
Yeah, I thought that was...
I'm going to go back and watch that next time.
I didn't realize that either, so I thought that was a good fact.
No, that's a good catch.
Midway through filming, director Lee Isaac Chung suffered exhaustion and was medically forced to leave production for 2 weeks. Director of photography Dan Mindell stepped in to direct.
Yeah, I'd read about this as well. Like, this was a really taxing movie, pushing 13 hours a day on his body for, I think they only shot 5 days. But that's still a rough shooting schedule. And, you know, he comes from smaller films, which have gotten good reviews, by the way. But that's a world of difference from having, you know, 80 crew members on a giant $150 million movie. That, you know, those are two different skill sets. And so I can understand those little things wearing him out because, you know, at the end of the day, when you're the director, everything comes back to you. You know, even if you have a hands-on producer, like, there's a lot you got to take care of. So I'm glad there was a point where if he had exhaustion, he took care of himself. He still delivered an incredible film.
Yeah. Glenn Powell's parents appear in this movie, sitting behind him and Daisy Edgar Jones during the rodeo scene. According to Glenn Powell, his parents have appeared in all his movies since Spy Kids 3D.
He's in Spy Kids 3D?
I didn't know that either.
Spy Kids 3D.
I guess he's one of the kids.
I'd assume so.
Yeah, because I don't know when this movie came out, but it was ages ago.
He actually played Antonio Banderas in the film.
Whatever.
All right. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Yeah.
I should.
Glenn Powell kept the grill of the Dodge Ram his character drives in the movie and had it made into a dining table. He also tried to keep the belt buckle his character wears, but had to return it after being called by production. The cast joked that both pieces were roughly the same size. I don't know what that means.
No.
Bill Paxton had tried to get a sequel to Twister off the ground for years. After seeing success as a director of films like Frailty, Paxton wanted to direct a modernized telling of the 1925 Tri-State Tornado that took the lives of 695 people. Paxton, with the help of producer James Cameron, also wanted the film to have an MPAA rating of R and maintain a realistic depiction of the damages that real tornadoes cause, and planned for it to be shot in 3D. The film at one point had an unofficial schedule date for the summer of 2012 under the title Twister 3D, but it was ultimately canceled due to budget concern and years later by Paxton's death.
Yes, I would assume his death would cause the cancellation of a film he was going to direct.
Yeah.
Yes. They're like, hey, we've got the budget to move forward, buddy, and they just drop it right on his grave. Yeah, no, I was a big Bill Paxton fan, so that did suck. But yeah, he did try to get this movie off the ground here for a long time. He really championed just trying to do something with it. You know, he always enjoyed this. He always really loved the film, and he always loved to talk about it. And he went back and recorded a bunch of stuff for the Twister ride that was Universal Studios for a number of years.
I didn't know they had a ride.
Yeah, they did. So once Bill Paxton really faded away, you know, Steven Spielberg was a producer on this. This movie, for some reason, a little bit after Bill Paxton's death, this movie hit the fast track. And they brought in, I think, Joseph Kosinski. He's the guy that did Top Gun Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other, some of the Mission Impossible movies you really like. Very good director.
Yeah.
He was originally brought in, and that's what they were going to go with. And he booted out a Helen Hunt-themed reboot, where a little bit after Bill Paxton died, the studio talked, well, not the studio. I think Helen Hunt pitched an idea. The studio was like, get away from us. But she pitched an idea of like a multiracial, multicultural team of storm chasers. And like she dies in the opening scene and they take the torch and move on. And she was like, we were all ready to go, but the studio didn't want it, which means they never called her back. Like she just, I don't know if she just like sent a letter or a pigeon like to Universal or whatever, whoever produced this movie. But like that was, she gave a couple interviews about this. And they wisely did not go that route. They went this one, and it turned out pretty well. Eventually, Kosinski had to drop out. I forget what else. I forget what else he moved on to. But we got Lee Isaac Chung, who I think did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which we. A water tower of El Reno is shown as a tribute to the El Reno tornado on May 31st, 2013. Three members of the Twister X team, Tim Samaras, Paul Samaras, and Carl Jung, died in the El Reno tornado. So that was a storm chasing, actual real life storm chasing.
Oh, damn.
Crew died in a tornado, the El Reno tornado. It was one that killed like 800 something people, 600 something people, something like that.
Damn, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Shit. Every time we take a look at this, they always say like, oh, we tried to go for this like disaster is what we gave us the idea. They look at the disaster and like the horrible devastation that it really causes. I mean, there's no like great tornado story. It's like with a happy ending, you know, like everything with a tornado is just that destruction. So
speaking of El Reno, Oklahoma is a real town where the largest tornado ever recorded occurred on May 31st, 2013. The twister was 2.6 miles wide and caused the deaths of four storm chasers.
2.6 miles wide?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
The first in storm chasing history. Unofficially, the wind speeds inside the tornado measured 313 miles per hour, which are among the strongest recorded on Earth.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow, man, that's crazy.
Devastating tornado.
Yeah, I can only imagine. You couldn't run away from it at 2.5 miles wide.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's why so many people died.
Wow, man.
Well, that is all the facts that I have.
And I only talked about the pre-production fact that I want to talk about this week, which is really all we had. But I think we pretty much covered Twisters. I think we talked about as much as we can a movie that we don't get a chance to like really break down. We just see it the one time in the theater. And it's not like how we'd normally do a movie.
So this movie got a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 7.1 on IMDb, and is rated a 4.0 on user review. So
it's not so bad.
It's not so bad. But believe it or not, I found some one-star reviews. Some people, like I said, really hated this movie.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that it had that much of a backlash. But I guess the people that love Twister.
So much vitriol. And here's one of them. This reviewer titles this, "Cheer for the Tornadoes."
Cheer for the Tornadoes, for they are the bringers of justice.
Simple, the worst bit budget movie I've seen in at least 20 years. It was pure torture every single minute. Let's start with the plot.
Madam Web.
There is none. A bunch of the worst actors say the worst writer lines while they chase tornadoes. The two protagonists are truly horrendous. Old Squinty looks like the Marble Man, and he can't act at all. Even worse somehow is the female lead, who is insufferable as these tornado chasers chase her. She's supposed to be the reluctant scientist who didn't want to return to her career following the death, thank God, of her colleagues. Got to love the scene where she randomly starts pushing buttons in Squinty's souped-up truck in the middle of chasing a deadly tornado. Good thing she's a mature scientist. By the final excruciating tornado, I was really hoping it would kill the entire town and every actor in it. My God, I would rather a Trump rally speech than sit through five more minutes of this terrible, awful movie. See the original. See two actors who have actual chemistry in Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt. They could act. Also, far better written script with a much more meaningful script. This movie is a Jar Jar Binks of disaster movies.
Jar Jar Binks of disaster films. That's a good burn to go out on.
Yeah.
But, I think he's off base with pretty much. I mean, there's some legitimate criticism there, but man, he just hates this movie.
I'm telling you, that's all that I
read.
Holy
shit. Because he just, there's a couple things that are like, okay, that's a fair point. But then he's like, I hope everybody died at the end.
Yeah. That's why I had to read it.
Of course, I pitched that metal ending earlier with her. With Kate beating her hands on his chest. It says Glenn Powell is impaled.
Impaled?
Yeah, that's the joke. Well, we'll see you next week, everybody. No, that's going to do it, guys. That's going to do it. I think. Anything else you want to add to Twisters?
No. I mean, it was all right.
I don't know what we're doing next week. I forgot. Is it already The Crow?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think we're already. I think we need to be watching The Crow like right as this podcast comes.
I don't know. Have to look at the schedule.
Yeah, I know we have a schedule, so it's pretty damn intricate at this point. We at least have the next like month and a half planned out with like a few movies in the future.
Yeah, we're gonna have to sit down though and go through some of it because
we have to modify
it. Shit goes by fast.
It really does. Like sometimes you think you have time to really cover something. We've been trying to do just Dracula special like all year, right? And there's no time to squeeze it in.
Oh my God.
Because it's like eight movies. Like we just have to set aside some time in the spring to do like either 8 weeks or split it up. Because just covering a movie like that or a big reboot or like even Batman. Jesus Christ, how many Batman movies we got to cover?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like you got all the mainline ones, and I want to talk about Mask of the Phantasm. So, I mean, it really is a lot. But we will be back next week, and we'll be talking more reboots, probably. And, hey, either way, we look forward to seeing you.
Bye.
See you.